Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Another great show tonight, I hope, dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and science and relations between them. Tonight, I think it's really going to pull all that together. I like this name. It has a certain poetry to it. I thought we would deal with the physics of God's symphony. I just love that title. And yes, it's going to have physics in it. You know, anytime you see the word physics in a name, there's probably going to be some physics in the show tonight. And for those of you who are familiar with physics, I'm even going to throw out a name, heretic superstrings is going to be something that we may talk about tonight. For those of you who know what that is, and for most of you, just forget what I just said. But for the rest of us, what we're really going to be talking about is how God expresses itself throughout our universe. And I'm going to pay a particular attention to the part of the universe that presently is understood or known to some degree by physics, science, because it may help some people understand certain things. Then I will probably go to some parts of the universe, if we have time, that unfortunately God knows about, but science doesn't, and kind of fill in the blanks, you might say. Some people say, well, isn't that about extra dimensions? Yeah, of time and space, yes, it's true, and I'll explain the differences, etc. But the most important thing is it's really about God. It's about how God really gets the job done, so to speak, and how we're going to, over the next 30 to 50 years, find God, amazingly, through science. I know that's hard to believe for those of you who are more on the spiritual side and follow metaphysics more than physics, and think that, well, it doesn't seem like it's going that way, and I would have to agree with you at that at this time. But give it another decade or so, and things are going to change. So, for right now, let's talk about a little. Well, first of all, let me say, if you want to call in, you can, of course. And you should have the numbers right from where you're listening to. And I would love to hear from you if you want to call in. And of course, there are 800 numbers from Canada. You can call in from the U.S. You can call in anywhere else. You got to pay for it. Sorry, and that's just the way it is. So let me start off by defining what I'm trying to explain. When I talk about physics, I'm talking about how things move and how they change and how they interact within our ability to determine that, okay? So that's the science of physics. Now, there's theories in physics that aren't yet science we can't really talk about how things interact because we don't have the experimental or any kind of feedback. So it's mostly like math and people's theories than it is like, oh, here it is, we can look at it, et cetera. So a lot of people in physics like to define that difference. I don't exactly, but I'm just saying that so that we can be on the same page about it. So we're really talking about, when I say the physics of God's symphony, then I must be saying, then I'm going to explain something that physics right now almost can't explain, especially if I'm talking about things that has to do with string theory, and especially heretic superstrings, because these kinds of things are really considered more theory than physics by most real physicists, maybe. Okay, so that's what I'm defining in that respect. God, everybody, I think, has some understanding about that. I would hope so. I'm talking about the being who created our universe. I'm not talking about the universe that we can presently see, which would be the physical or physics universe. I'm talking about the universe that is encompassing everything that is beyond what most of us have a sense of at the present time, if we're physically alive. But if we were astrally alive or mentally, monastically alive, or in some other dimension of time and space, we would experience more of what this being's universe is like. And the symphony has to do really with the method. And this is the part I love. Because although it sounds really poetic, it's actually quite musical as well. And let me explain it something like this. I'm going to tell you a little bit about how God's symphony is created. God uses a very unique, for God, maybe not so unique, but for us it's unique, type of series of instruments within its symphony. And these instruments are fantastic devices. They are so fantastic that I'm going to have to describe them with using your creative imagination, because I don't know of any specific device that is exactly like this. But we'll try to explain how each of these musical elements are put together. They are, to begin with, multidimensional. Right now, physics doesn't understand this, but that's okay. And each one of these amazing instruments on each one of seven dimensions of time and space has 49, 7 times 7, 49, we'll call them strings. Just think of it as a huge kind of, way beyond violin or any other kind of string instrument. I don't know. Maybe the closest thing might be a super piano of sorts, because it would have many more strings than even a piano has, but it's getting a little bit closer. Maybe that's why we love pianos, many of us do, as much as any other instrument, because it has so many additional strings to it compared to many of the other more simpler formed instruments. But nonetheless, okay, we're getting too far ahead of ourselves, actually. So let me talk about these instruments. Each one can tune itself as it plays and change its pitch and change the direction and angle at which its music comes out in real time as each one of its strings moves. And it can change the strings all together at the same time, or any one of the strings in the ways that I just described. So if it gets pretty complex here, now stay with me on this. So let's talk about like a super piano now. Pianos usually have usually three strings per key, you know. And so if you look at this, it depends on what kind of piano. Some pianos have been built very simplistically. Others have more strings as time has developed the piano. So the more strings it has per key, usually the richer the sound is and the more it reverberates. Okay, so now, when we look at this situation, we've got 49 strings, but the strings themselves, just like we see sometimes when people play a guitar, it's like you can push the string, or sometimes they have a little lever on a guitar that can do this, that moves the string at a different angle, sometimes to the other strings, and causes the note to change a bit. Well, every one of the 49 strings can do that. And remember, there's 49 times 7. There's 49 times 7. So it's a huge, huge number. It's a very big number. And there's 49 times 7 strings can do this in an amazing array of combinations. Now, you got 7 different dimensions, and each dimension, you actually have 49 potential strings. Usually, though, just so you know, usually only 7 of the groups of 7 of the 49 strings play together. They add nuances to each other. Occasionally, though, they actually play separately. Okay, you're following all that? I don't know if you're keeping it all in your head, because this is quite an instrument that I'm describing to you. And this is called, by the way, in physics, it's a heretic type of superstring. It's a kind of superstring that can change its angle and its direction and the way that it moves in real time. And you can say, well, okay, what is this string doing? It's creating frequencies, and it has like vectors of movement, which is kind of a direction to the movement, and an angle to the movement. And also, it does something else. It creates, at the moment that it is played, it creates something we'll call a charge. So every time it is struck, it produces a little charge. And it's struck at a regular basis, so there's a charge that's being produced pretty regularly. That's a very interesting thing. The other thing about these strings on this piano, if you can imagine this, I'm going to add one more element to them. Remember, God is no simple being. This is a complex being, so it has a complex means of producing its own symphony. And so each one of these strings actually can change its position, and it can actually, this is going to sound a little hard to believe, imagine a piano, instead of the strings being out all in a line, they actually more are in a cylindrical shape, and they can move around each other depending upon where God chooses them to be, which changes their relationship to all the other strings, and angles change all the other strings. And so the whole thing is just absolutely amazingly adaptable, creative, and you can do some really fantastic things with it. Okay, wow. Now, you could say, that sounds absolutely impossible. Nobody could build such a crazy... Well, of course, God can. But the interesting thing is what I'm describing to you is and has been suggested by some parts of string theorist physicists. I'm not kidding. That this is actually incorporated with... Now, they may not have designed this piano quite the way I have, but every element that I put into the design of the piano is part of this very vast theory. Now, the math on it is absolutely excruciating, and recently I've been involved in, we'll say, taking courses that explain some of the ways that all the math is connected to all this stuff, and it's really, really nasty. If you're into math, it's not, but I'm not, and so it's just nasty as can be trying to figure out how this thing fits together if you know math. Luckily, though, I know it another way, so I can explain it to you that way, because if I had to explain it in mathematics, I could not do it. I mean, it's just beyond my ability to replicate the amount of mathematics necessary to explain everything I'm trying to explain to you. Now, interestingly, you can boil it down into a fairly succinct formulas, but to try to explain it in any active sense, it's just very difficult. So let's go on. Okay, so what does God do? And how many of these instruments are in God's symphony? Well, the numbers are staggering. As a matter of fact, the numbers are too large for us to be able to even think of. They're in the trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions, times trillions and times trillions and trillions, of the numbers. The vast, vast number of these instruments are playing throughout our entire universe. And what are they doing? What did they produce? Well, it depends where you are, because this grand instrument not only produces in our physical universe, and I'm going to tell you what it produces in a minute or two here, but it produces in six other major dimensions of time and space other things that have some differences to themselves. In our universe, this produces a super kind of symmetrical beauty that is symmetrical in one sense, the super kind of symmetrical, in that everything is balanced, but it's asymmetrical in the sense that nothing is always happening together and at the same time. There's a tremendous amount of variety of differences, and the reason is, and this is going to kind of shock you, that God is not the one who is playing the instrument. This is a very strange thing. God designed these instruments so that they could be played by life. And the fascinating thing about it is that the instrument also plays some things created by beings that were created by God to begin with that kind of produces more consistent but less exciting and interesting kinds of music. These kinds of systems produce things like forces, which include gravity. And some people might refer to them as in our type of environment, in our universe, as bosonic particles, or not particles, forces, excuse me. And well, there may be some particle issues too, but think of them as forces that push particles around. And that includes certain types of maybe certain types of gravity and other things. But the most important part of this, the fascinating part about this, is that it's like, if you think of it, it's like a constant beat to things. It keeps the universe in order to some extent. And it provides structure so that things move and do things in a specific way throughout our universe. It provides symmetry. But the asymmetrical part is that there's other things that are produced by these same instruments. The same instruments can also be added to and further played by life, which is created from particles. And these particles make chemistry. Some of them are, a lot of it is called fermions, for those of you who know what that word is. And it produces a whole array of particles and things that actually make us up and makes up all kinds of, every kind of life. But eventually, when it produces life that can really play the instrument to a beautiful level, and it starts with human beings but goes beyond us, then that life can, with the background of the symmetry, produce like an added and very special and unique types of music that intertwines with the basic music of the forces. So it's a wonderful and it's a beautiful way of creating freedom. Freedom of thought, freedom of creation, where there is a consistency and a way of holding together a whole dimension of a universe at a time, so that until the rest of us, the humans and beyond, of life, can take over and become even more creative and not need so much all these forces that impose themselves to some extent upon us. The forces are greatest where we live right now, which is the physical universe. They lessen in the higher dimensions where we can function more spiritually and where life itself has a more active role in the playing of these grand instruments. Wow. Now, I realize I've said an awful lot in a very short time. A lot of people are probably scratching their heads. What is he talking about? This is getting way out there. Well, maybe. You don't have to get all the science part. I'm throwing just enough science in for those of you who are into science where you can kind of say, oh, I know what he's talking about. Yeah, I read a book on that. You know, I heard a program about that, right? Whatever. So for those of you who are into that, you could kind of pick up on it. Now, how does God actually make the pianos run? How do we do so, these super pianos or super instruments? We do so through our thought. And that's hard to understand because most people think that you have to push on something or do something else to make something move. But in reality, these instruments respond to thought. They are tuned so that the thing that, like on a super piano, the thing that hits the key is a certain kind of thought. And if the thought is more towards God's, then the harmony and the themes of the music are along God's harmony and themes, and they reach stages of beauty and beyond. When they go against God, they sound disharmonious, and they create problems among themselves, and they produce too many forces and too much confusion and destruction sometimes of the particles. Some people would say that the bosons are getting overactive and the fermions are getting kind of erratic, for those of you who understand the physics of that. So things are getting out of balance in some places because of that. Possibly, if you ask me, right now on this planet that may be happening. But there always is a balance. There always is a balance to the whole system. Don't think it can get too far out of balance, because the amazing thing is, if you remember what I said, unlike a typical piano, the strings are all circle around each other, and because they do, when there's an imbalance on one side, somewhere else at an angle that's sort of going to balance out the out-of-balanced angle of the other strings, will come in and will restore a balance. So it's a self-correcting piano. what you lose is you lose some of the great creativity and beauty that could have happened, but you don't end up with the piano just all the strings is breaking and falling apart. You just end up maybe with some life not growing as quickly and some suffering taking place by the life that's involved in the more negative aspects of playing in a symphony away from God's thought. But you can do so. If you want to play these grand pianos away from God's thought, it is your right to do so. And you can do so best by thinking in ways that are, we'll say, away from God's thought. The worst thing is to think and take actions. Because when you take actions, you're using more of those extra strings I was talking about, and that produces a lot more disharmony and a lot more, we'll say, intensity to the music. As the intensity goes up, because you're taking action, particularly in our part of the universe, the results can be pretty nasty because it really detracts from the growth of life itself. And it will reduce our own consciousness. So how much we are conscious of what is happening will reduce. That's never a good thing. It's sort of like our sense of ourselves and being alive is reduced as we think and then take action and use these grand instruments in ways that are against ourselves. Now you can say, well, how do you access these instruments then? Well, every time you think you're doing it, and every time you take an action on the thought, you're intensifying it significantly. Every time. The instruments are all around us. There are so many of them. They're to be found everywhere you can imagine. And they're affecting things, basic things. They're affecting certain kinds of forces, as I said, bosons. And they're also affecting things called quarks. Quarks are kind of like particles, and they come in different varieties. But they make up all of the substances that make us into a form. So you look at your body, every part of your body is really made up of quarks. I know a lot of people say, well, they're made up of atoms, aren't they? And the atoms have protons and neutrons and electrons. Yeah, all of those things really have quarks that are involved in their process, although the electrons are actually connected to the force side more in some respects. There's a connection there. And the other thing that God did is it made two general kinds of ways of interacting with the strings. If you interact really in a way that is more positive, more towards God's thought, it makes the strings play themselves some. So they're almost like, it's like changing the piano to somewhat of an organ. And it's, like a big pipe organ or something that has some additional energy being piped into it that keeps the note playing. And this is great. Now, unfortunately, it's just like you turn off the power to the organ whenever you think, and even worse, take actions that are against the creator's thought. And then, unfortunately, the results are the intensity may not be added to by this outside type of the strings taking over for themselves, so to speak. And unfortunately, it reduces the overall volume, and it makes a confusion, a kind of disorganization to start to take place. Now, I've just been talking about one dimension of time and space. I haven't even gotten beyond that, really. It's important to realize now that every time any one of these strings plays, a particle and or a force is being affected within our physical universe every time. So every time anything is changed in the symphony, there's some change in what we think of as our physical world. It's here on Earth, it's all throughout the universe, every time. So we have an amazingly interactive, to say the least, universe, especially where we are. Things are moving around like crazy and changing a lot. And this is a normal part of the system, a normal part of the system. It is like you have this incredible symphony going on, but the way that the symphony works is dependent upon the things that the symphony is creating, which is us ultimately, that then have a feedback loop into further playing the symphony, and how they play the symphony that affects the future elements of the symphony. Did you follow all that? Okay. So it's really fascinating. We are all doing this. We are all musicians in God's symphony, every one of us. And human beings are actually greater in their, we'll say, musical contributions than are any other type of life lower than human, on an average. So if you look at the mammals, if you look at any other kind of animal, plants, of course, all these creatures fall into a lower category, on an average, than humans do, in terms of how much and how well we play the instrument. Now, when I say how well, I'm talking about how much we have an effect on the instrument, not how well we do in terms of following God's thought. Because actually, there may be some animals that follow God's thought way better than human beings do. But their ability to truly play the whole instrument is so limited. They can't be nearly as creative. Their creativity is limited to maybe, instead of the seven major groups of strings, just one of the major groups of strings, and maybe only a few of those. That gives them a very limited range. Now, they may be very good at following God's thought within that limited range, but their overall level of creation is tremendously hampered by not having the whole instrument. Humans are the first of life that can access the entire instrument in terms of the three lowest dimensions of time and space. We can access the entire instrument in the monastic, the astral, and the physical worlds. And that includes the etheric or electromagnetic part of the physical worlds as well. We can do that. Now, beyond the monastic, we can't. We have very, very, very slight abilities in the intuitional or Buddhic parts of dimension of time and space to play this instrument. And beyond that, we really have no ability. But there are beings beyond human. There are super beings, we'll call them masters or whatever. Some people call them liberated souls, whatever. And our alter egos, like our solar angels, that's like the beings that are like super souls to our souls, and they help us out sometimes. These beings can access this same super duper God piano all the way up the chain into higher dimensions of time and space. Maybe not to the very top, because to get to the very top, you have to become an even more super being. You have to advance yourself to the very near levels of God itself to get to the very highest dimensions of time and space and still be able to play this great instrument. Now, let me tell you something else about the instrument. I'm almost out of time. I wanted to cover the basics of the instrument before I go into any of the details about this. I got about a minute here to do it. Okay, very quickly. In order to completely understand how this instrument works, we have to also realize that, like harmonics, if you're familiar with that word, if you play a note in a higher dimension of time and space, it harmonically relates to and has an effect on all the notes that are played below it. And unfortunately, the reverse is true too. If you play a lot of notes in the lower dimensions, it can affect, due to harmonics, the higher dimensions of time and space to some extent. So there is an interrelationship between the dimensions of time and space. Now, this goes way beyond superstring theory, because a lot of superstring theorists don't even believe there are other dimensions that anything could exist in anyway. And what I'm explaining here is these other dimensions are even bigger and wider and greater. We'll talk more about those when we come back from break. We're out of time for this segment, and when we come back, I'll go into how this applies to us on a daily basis, because I'll be more practical and let your minds cool off for the next couple of minutes. And then when we come back, we'll go into this other side of things. So we'll be back in about 2 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. I was looking around the studio here and noticing that some people had this glazed look in their eyes, like, what did he say? Okay, got it. I'll try to simplify this. I'm so sorry if I lost some people. I know. It's pretty hard to describe how God creates a universe using things that we don't really understand. Maybe I understand it, but I have to be able to explain it to you guys. Okay, let's try and refocus our thought then. I thought the piano thing was great, but I guess it got too complex from with all the things and the strings, isn't it? All right, so the question was, how does the thought affect the strings? This was a question that was actually posed to me here in the studio, so I think I'll start with that. Okay, think of it this way, that our minds are also made from the same strings. Okay, since everything about us is made from all of these instruments, when the instrument and the mind are in approximately, we'll say the same kind of vibration and the same kind of vector and the same kind of charge in the same kind of angle to each other, or similar, the string responds to us. When it isn't, that string doesn't. Now remember, each instrument has these hundreds of strings that are moving in relationship to each other. They can move and change their angle to each other. So there's always some string or strings that are connected in some way to someone's or something's thought. And also, if we exaggerate this by bringing in the word action or interaction, that's even more true. Okay? So thought produces some effect, and then interactions, as we know in our own lives, produce even greater effects. Most people aren't aware that their thoughts are affecting things. But I think everybody knows that their actions affect things. Okay, so that's what's going on. Just so if you look at your hands, then, and if your hands are taking movement and doing things with your hands, so you're driving a car, as you move your hands on the car and you're interacting with all your senses through your eyes and the rest of your body's interacting, you're moving the gas pedal and the brakes, etc., all those things are connected to strings that are affecting one or more of these instruments. Ah, how's that? Did I get there? I'm going to look around. Did I get there? Yeah, I got a yes answer to that. Okay. I covered that question. I don't know if I can cover everything because this is not going to be easy, right? Okay. So we can see how things are connected to each other. Now, I'm going to add another layer of complexity. I'm sorry, but I have to do this because this is another thing that is not yet understood or known in physics, but it will be determined, I gather, within the next decade or so. Every instrument in God's symphony has an effect on every other instrument. Not only do the strings themselves affect the strings of the same instrument in other dimensions of time and space, they also affect every other instrument in the entire universe. Wow. So there is an effect from one instrument to the other. That means that all things are in communication and connected together because all things are being created by the strings, and all the strings are affecting all other strings in some different ways, which I'm going to explain. Wow. Tell me that isn't something. It also means that we are all part of an interconnectivity, which we call God. We are all part of God, no matter where we are. You could be on the most isolated place in our part of the universe, not seemingly touching or connecting almost to anything, and you're still connected to everything else. The connections might be more loose and not as clear than if you're in closer proximity and or thought and interaction with other beings and other things. But nonetheless, no matter where you are connected. Time and space do not matter. Let me explain this now. We always think that time and space and the distance between things has a direct relationship on how much those things affect each other. But that's kind of true under certain circumstances between particles and forces, which is what the strings create. So the particle and forces may not be as attuned to each other if they're very far apart in terms of time and space, which we refer to as distance. But as far as the strings are concerned, time and space have no effect on them whatsoever. They literally are the creators of time and space and dimensionality. And being the creators, they supersede any question of what time and space means. So they're not affected by time and space. So let me give you a more succinct example. I know this is the part where I usually give the example, so I'm going to do that. Let's say that all of you out there are on one side of our galaxy, and I'm on the other. And probably a lot of you are shaking your heads right now and saying, yeah, he's on the other side of the galaxy for sure. Okay, but I'm over here, I'm way out here on the other side of the galaxy, and it's 180,000 light years. We're just so far apart, it's ridiculous. Long, long, the distance is unimaginable. It's still small relative to the size of the universe, but it's a lot of distance. Okay, we're on different sides of the galaxy. But let's say that you and I are in common thought and common actions where we are at. Okay, we're doing pretty much the same things. Now, here's the amazing part. This is the part that you're going to find to be really out there and metaphysical, especially for the more scientific thinking people in our audience. Us, you listeners out there, and I are actually as close as we possibly can be because the instruments that we're playing are not separated by time and space like our bodies are. As long as our minds, our thoughts, and our consciousness, which is part of our thought, and our interactions with our environment are similar or the same, we are amazingly close together, and we will interact with each other through our own musical instruments so that what I do on mine will instantly become part of the thought that you do on yours. You'll be contributing to some of my thought and creativity, and I'll be contributing to some of your thought and creativity. Now, we may not be aware of that because our senses are still separated even the, and they're part of this part of the universe, unless we have what is known as Buddha consciousness. Then we start becoming aware of each other. But that's pretty much beyond human. Humans really have trouble with this. If we were superhuman, we would know exactly what we're talking about. But since we're not, then it's going to be hard to prove this to you, because your experience is not going to be this on a conscious level. But that the instantaneous help we seem to get when we become very creative and very godlike in our thought, when our thought seems to be virtuous and focused out and goodness, and when we're taking actions especially, and when we're thinking that way to begin with, we get a lot more help. We get the help from all others who are doing that, from clear across the entire universe, and especially our galaxy. Because there's no separation between our actual machines, or I shouldn't say machines, between our actual instruments that are working together without the hindrance of time and space. Even though we, because we are made of the particles that these instruments are producing, are still separated because we haven't perfected our senses enough to be able to join the time and space together enough so we can sense each other in a direct sense. We can only sense each other because we seem to be more effective, more efficient, more capable than we would be alone in being able to play the great musical instruments. Wow. Now that's a practical thing. So what am I saying? I'm saying that when you align yourself with God, you align yourself with all others who are doing so. And you gain super abilities, abilities that may astound you in others too. You may be able to do things that are truly superhuman. And you can do these things because the instrument you're playing in the symphony is in tune with so many others, even outside of anywhere near where you could sense them directly, because the time and space between you and them is too great. Whoa. Okay, let's get into extra dimensionality, because I don't want to run out of time for this part, because this is a fun part. Okay, so here in the physical dimension, we're pretty limited. Even when we're thinking and interacting in God's symphony, the part that God's producing, and getting away from the more discordant parts that maybe a lot of people are playing, but we decide not to play with that part. But we're still very limited. And the reason we're limited is because of that sense issue. The physical senses in the physical universe are so separating, the physics of the physical universe is so separated, that it disallows us access to the direct interaction in a physical sense with other people. And this produces a limitation on our creativity, and especially the amount of virtue we can create. Now, we can function in three different dimensions of time and space as human beings. Those, again, are the etheric physical, the astral, and the monastic or mental. If we can bring those three dimensions together and balance them, using those senses from those bodies and using them all at the same time, a very, very great feat. We can play our instruments and the strings on them to the level of God's type of functioning on those instruments within the three lower dimensions of time and space. We're down to 3 out of 7 then. And we can produce some pretty amazing results. Not super spectacular, but certainly spectacular. And we can do so in ways that are incredibly meaningful. Our lives become super meaningful as we co-create, not only with God, but with all those who are co-creating with God together. This is living a life as a soul, of a soul, for those of you who have listen to some of my other shows, of course, or read the textbook or whatever you've read or mine or whatever. Same concept, though. We're living more as souls together, which is a wonderful experience. And we're playing in the symphony at a much higher level. So the music we make is incredibly wonderful. It produces great truths. It produces great wisdom. It has the ability to touch on beauty and to give us a sense of oneness together while we experience our own creative individuality that we give into the situation and make for other people. Because remember, our instruments are, their time and space does not separate them. Only our senses are limited. Now you might say, well, what about when we leave the physical world? Well, that's what I'm going to be talking about next. And when we leave the physical world, whether by having out-of-body experience or in the more common situation, we just physically die. We live in a dimension of time and space in which we lose the physical part. And that's not so great because the physical needs so much more help. It's the most discordant and it has the most problems. But we gain strength in our ability in the astral and mental and a little bit maybe in the buddhic so that the music becomes more beautiful, certainly, and it may enhance and become greater in its love and its truthfulness and its wisdom. So these are good things. It's sort of a trade-off, though, of course. And the instrument, though, it goes dead, in a sense. I mean that literally, too, for the physical world. We don't have bodies and senses any longer in the physical world. And so, consequently, the instrument can't play there. It's always a problem, for the most part. Now, there are some exceptions to this. If we were able to make the physical parts of the strings so harmonically balanced that whenever we play the astral and mental strings, the lower strings also play to some degree. That's called fusion of the strings. If we can fuse those strings together, by fusing our own senses together, even when we physically die, the corresponding senses we use in the astral and monastic worlds cause some changes in the physical world, and it allows us to get close to people in the physical world and add to them, help their great super pianos play better, even though we're no longer physically alive. That's only for the few people who have created enough virtue in themselves while they were physically alive. So when they go on to these other dimensions of time and space, their instruments continue to contribute even to the lowest dimension that they no longer live on. Same is true when we die from the astral and go to the mental world. The same kind of effect can be realized. Wow. So there is a benefit, to say the least, of living one's life in as virtuous a fashion while we are physically or while we are astrally, while we're alive in that dimension of time and space. Being alive means that our consciousness is focused in that realm. Once it's focused in that realm, that's where the strings play with greatest intensity. We lose that intensity when we die from there. And usually, unless we've created a lot of virtue, we lose all the ability to play there. But for those of us who create enough virtue, we can fuse those strings together between the different dimensions, just as we fuse our senses together, and we actually can still contribute even after our death. Very good reason to be doing that. You can see how it's so interesting to play in God's symphony because it gives us so much more meaning. The more strings we play at a greater intensity with more harmony to God and greater interaction with others, the more meaningful our life is. So the very meaning to us of what it means to be and to exist is dependent upon what I just said. And for many people, once they realize what I just said, they can't go back and say, well, I'm going to get meaning out of life by having a bowling score that's 30 pins higher this week. It won't do much for them. They need to do much more than that. Now, that doesn't mean some people aren't going to find that that's a meaningful thing for them, because at their level, that is where they're functioning. It's nothing negative about them or anything else. It's just where their particular musical ability is right now. Their ability to play their instrument is relatively limited. They've only played it for a shorter time or not as well in the ways that they've used it, and so they can only play at a certain level. The higher the level we can play, the better off we are and the more meaningful life is. But then again, if we don't reach those levels of high meaning, meaning still can be found at the lower levels, and we may not miss it because we never experienced it in the first place. So be aware of all those things that I just said. All right, let's go to the next level. If we go beyond the monastic and we start talking about the intuitional or Buddhic dimension, we're talking about being superhuman. At this point, now we're no longer just vaguely sensing the thought of others and the interactions of others with their instruments without direct sense. We now are sharing their senses. We start being able to have their experiences of playing their own instrument while we play ours. We don't just experience some elements of their instrument playing, being played. We experience them playing it. Once you do that, you're off to becoming a real part of God. I'm not saying that if you don't have that, you're not part of God, but you're not going to experience being a real part of God. And this is what we're talking about in the direct experience of godliness. And it's like the whole universe changes for someone with that perspective. So let me say it again, because I may have lost some of you. I said it very fast. I'm talking faster because I'm running out of time. The difference is that those people who are just into quote-unquote, which is fine, the human experience, purely human, are only able to vaguely experience the instruments of others in helping them to play their own instrument to when they're co-creating with God in some way. That's a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that. But those who reach the Buddhic dimension and the Buddhic strings of the instrument not only experience the instruments of others, but they experience the others playing that instrument, which could be zillions of others playing that instrument, their own instrument, and the instrument itself while they play theirs. Did you follow me? I hope so. Could you imagine the intensity and the wonderment of what it would be to play in that symphony? Because that is God's symphony, and now we're experiencing God itself as we co-create with God. We're not just experiencing the effects of creating more of God in our environment around us and helping others, but we're actually experiencing God itself, and this is the part of our universe sometimes referred to as the etheric cosmic parts, the parts that go beyond the limitation of just self. We now become and live through the beingness of other life itself and experience that beingness at higher and higher levels. The Buddhic plane is just the beginning of the experience. There's an even higher one. I'm running out of time. There's even a higher one called the Atmic, and then the Monadic, and finally the Logoic. And when you, as each step, you're moving more and more into experiencing greater and greater levels of God itself. And the instrument and you are becoming one. Eventually, you lose all the particles and forces. They pretty much go away because they were just a hindrance. They were sort of a crutch. And you just experience the strings themselves. And eventually, the strings and you become so intensely intertwined that you and the string are no longer, or strings are no longer separated by anything. And all the strings of everybody else and yourself are no longer separated by anything. So eventually you become the one of all and all of one. And you experience in time, past, present, and future. And you experience an amazing thing about past, present, and future is you can go backwards and forwards in it through a thing called tachyon resolution. I don't want to get too far out here. I just threw it out there for those science people. And so what's taking place now is that you're actually now living in a timeless existence, realizing that there's still further creation, but you can, from your own creation, extrapolate from your point in existence to the very, very, very end of this cycle of our universe as you foresee going on to an even more complex universe than this one, because life never ends. It just gets more and more meaningful and more interesting. Fascinating subject. We are just plain out of time. Anyone who's interested, hey, check out the foreveryoungproducts.com website. Try some of the resveratrol if you've got pets particularly. try a bottle of it. A, it stuff works. Try it on yourself if you're really experimental, because I think it's wonderful stuff. Contact us, agelesswisdom.com. If you have any interest in co-serving with the group that I'm a member of, because we do all kinds of interesting things, you can reach me at thoughts@whylifeis.com, and we are out of time. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.